This is episode 36 of the Next Year Now podcast.
It's not the doctor's job. It's not the nutritionist's job. It's not anybody else's job to fix you. It's up to you to fix yourself. Now, you may use or leverage some expertise in the area, but I think when you take full ownership and accountability of what's going on in your life, like with bone-crushing honesty, that is the foundation of transformation in virtually any area of life, and most importantly, in your own personal health.
Welcome to the Next Year Now podcast with Tom Hefner. Tom believes that if you really want to thrive at work and in life, then every day, purposeful habits and practices are vital. The Next Year Now podcast will not only help you identify and integrate these habits into your daily life, but also bring you key insights and lessons from some of the most successful people in their fields. And here is your host, Tom Hefner.
Hello and welcome to the podcast devoted to helping you thrive at work and in life. The topic of habits and practices is always front and center in our discussion, but we also explore how we use these habits and practices to improve our personal development, productivity, creativity, health and well-being, business, and entrepreneurship. Today's guest, Wade Lightheart, is probably one of the most unique individuals I've ever spoken with. And that's because Wade has packed more in his lifetime than most people could pack in 10 lifetimes. Wade is a fitness and wellness enthusiast, entrepreneur and businessman, and author of several best-selling books. In our conversation, Wade and I will be discussing Wade's body breaking down at the height of his success as a professional bodybuilder and how he learned to heal the damage, why most probiotics don't work for us, Wade's most important life lessons from living a full and varied life, including multiple near-death experiences, book recommendations to help transform your mind as much as your body, and so much more. Wade Lightheart, host of the Awesome Health Podcast, is a three-time all-natural national bodybuilding champion, advisor to the American Anti-Cancer Institute, and director of education at Biooptimizers Nutrition. He's also the author of several books, including Staying Alive in a Toxic World and The Wealthy Backpacker. He's also the host of the Awesome Health Podcast, which is a big part of his mission to help others fix their digestion and transform their health with the daily practice of positive principles, rituals, and optimizers. Wade, thank you for joining us today, and welcome to the show, my friend.
Great to be here, Tom. Thank you.
Wade, one of the fun things about podcasting is researching the guests we have on the show. It's always fun and interesting to learn about the other people and the lives that they lead. And when I was researching you, man, it felt like I was researching somebody who's lived not just one life, but maybe 10 lives. I mean, you've had multiple near-death experiences. You've lived in an ashram in India. You've been thrown off a train at gunpoint on the East German border. You've competed in the Mr. Universe bodybuilding competition as the only vegetarian. I mean, you've had your own nutrition store. You've surfed in Indonesia, which I love surfing. We're going to talk more about this. And probably another 10 things I don't have time to mention now, but that are equally as fascinating. Most people, you know, they end up honing in on one or two pursuits in life. Not you. I mean, you've truly, it seems, sampled what life has to offer. What's driven you to pursue a life full of so many varied experiences and accomplishments?
It's a great question. I would think first off is, you know, I can remember if I can go way, way back to childhood, I was really motivated to excel. I think I was just born that way. Self-discipline came naturally to me. So these are things that, you know, I just didn't have to think about where maybe other people might have had more challenges. You know, I can't write very well, like far as my penmanship is terrible. Some people have beautiful penmanship. So everybody has individual aptitudes and gifts. But I recall in literally this kind of watershed moment when I was in grade three, because I wanted to advance as quickly as possible in the school. The school that I was in had actually stopped advancing children as a policy in the school. Now, at this point, I would be finished my math books, my readers, and all this sort of stuff in like October. I would just go through everything and just do everything until it was done in the hopes that I would move forward. And I remember my teacher explaining me in grade three, because I said, okay, I'm done everything. Can I move on to the next grade? And this was my same conversation I had my grade one teacher, my grade two teacher, and then finally my grade three teacher. And she says, no, we don't actually put people through school anymore. We don't advance grades. And I'm like, so you mean it doesn't matter if I get 100% or 90% or 75% or 60%? It doesn't matter what I get. I cannot move any further or get ahead any faster in this system. And she's like, no. I'm like, well, what's the point of getting 100? What's the point of getting 100? And she was like, well, this is the way it is. And I remember just being shocked and seeing this tunnel vision of my life going, oh man, this is going to be a long haul. You know, I don't know if I can stand this, because I was just motivated to learn. You know, I was studying Greek tragedies and philosophy and mythology at that time. You know, it's just, I don't know why. It was just weird, right? It was just that kind
a little bit
of guy.
Weird, but that's cool though. I mean, in a good way.
And unfortunately, especially as I became a teenager and older, I think I've cultivated an against the man mentality, you know, misspent youth, that aggressive nature, and always trying to find different you know, overcome the system or that sort of stuff. But there was another watershed moment at 15. And at 15 years old, my parents moved to an extremely rural place. I mean, it's 5 miles to my nearest neighbor up a mountain on a dirt road that would sometimes get snowed in. I would have to take a skidoo out to get to the bus and then an hour bus ride to get to school.
Whoa.
Very rural, not really good when you're 15. So I was depressed about the idea that I had moved in this kind of situation when I was 15. There was no term for depression back then. I was just like, oh man, this sucks. And then at the same time, my sister, who was 4 years my elder, was diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease, which is a form of cancer. And I literally watched her over the course of 4 years through the medical model go through chemotherapy, radiation, catheters, you know, just the horrific aspects of anybody that's gone through cancer before she died at 22. So it was, this was, you know, obviously traumatic. I didn't really fully understand the impact of that for about 10 years. The silver lining of that, there was another thing. She had given me a bodybuilding magazine just at the same time she got diagnosed. So it was all happening. And I figured, well, if I'm to avoid being sick, I'm going to have to build up muscles. There was a picture of Troy Zuclato on the cover, who had just won Mr. California. He was a blonde guy and he had these two beautiful girls there. And I thought, oh, wow, if I can get muscles, I can get these girls and I could be healthy and I could do all these. This is my thinking at 15 years old. So I undertook building a gym in my barn and started training out there, sometimes in a snowmobile suit at 40 below, my hands freezing to the bar. But I was determined that I was going to get out of this place and I was going to get to California and I was going to go, you know, live my life on my own terms, just like, you know, guys like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was my first kind of mentor at that time. I read his books and watched his movies. And he said that if you have a positive attitude, self-discipline, and you're willing to put in the hard work, you can achieve anything. And I thought, okay, that's an easy philosophy. Nobody around here seems to have it. So I'm going to go that route. Now, the advantage of having someone close to you die at such a young age, right, and it's kind of a weird day to say that's an advantage, but life is what it happens and tragedy is part of living, is that I got really clear that nothing in life is a guarantee, that including your life, that it could be ended any time. And I always thought of my sister. You know, I remember I would sit in the room or I'd lie on the room where, you know, she actually died. And I would lie there and I'd look out the window and I'd say, what was she thinking at this time? We used to have conversations before her death. And what I realized is that life, when people die, it's not what they've done that they're upset about. It's what they haven't done, the regrets that they have. And I determined that I would not have any regrets and then I would pursue whatever I wanted to the full thing. And when I didn't want to do it anymore, I would just stop doing it. And I've lived that philosophy my whole life. And that's what's kind of led to all these kind of weird adventures and unusual events and sometimes mishaps. And I've been very lucky that I got out of a few of them. But the bottom line is that's been the foundational philosophy for me.
Yeah, I had something happen when I was 16, something similar where my dad, who was in the Marine Corps for 27 years, he was shot by another Marine who went crazy and came in and shot my dad. Well, shot my dad's XO. My dad was the CO at the time, killed my dad's XO, shot my dad through the chest with a hollow point 45. Miraculously, he lived, other than kind of, the trauma of that situation, but no worse for the wear physically. Like you, I kind of had that sense of the fragility of life that's not guaranteed and how that can really drive the rest of your life is really, I mean, I didn't quite get it at the time. And it took, you know, 4, 5, 6 years before I kind of realized it, how much of an impact that can have on you.
Yeah, it's not what happens in life. It's what you take out of it.
Well, looking back on all those experiences and accomplishments that you've had since then, can you share with us the one or two lessons you've learned along the way that, you know, really stand out for you, whether that was being tossed off the train at the, you know, the East German border or some other experiences? What are those lessons that really stand out for you?
Well, I think maybe the biggest one or the most transformational one happened at the 2003 Mr. Universe contest. So keep in mind, there was actually two things, one at the contest and then one not very far after, so, which were very polarizing. So if you go back to 2003, I was preparing for the Mr. Universe contest for approximately 11 months of the year. And I was on a rigid diet, had to win a bunch of championships, the qualifications, the nationals, and then go to that, which is a really, really long time to stay in contest shape. It's, I wouldn't warrant it on anybody. But the bottom line, I was determined to do this and it didn't matter. And it was an opportunity to represent my country. And when I was outside the hotel, the Oberoi Towers actually was one of the hotels that was attacked in the terrorist attack back in the day, but not at that time, but beautiful hotel. And I was out there and there was these young Indian boys who were waiting to see all the bodybuilders. And of course, the event was going to be staged at a nearby cricket stadium where they were literally having 30,000 people at a bodybuilding contest, which I never imagined ever before. It's kind of a bizarre sport and people, it's not, you know, as public as like a football or something like that. So I developed a little friendship with these people. And of course, these young boys couldn't afford the tickets to go. And I said, well, you know, after the contest, I would be happy to come over to where your guys' gym is and I'll put on a little exhibition for you and do a training thing. And so after the contest, and each day that I would come outdoors, there'd be more and more of these boys telling the story that I was going to come there, right? So it was by the end, there was like a whole gaggle of them. So when I got done the contest, I met up with the boys at the designated time. And of course, they wouldn't even let them close to the hotel. I would have to walk out off the hotel grounds to meet them. And they would be waiting there faithfully every day. And so got a cab and drove through the streets of Mumbai, was taken to this place, and I got to see the kind of living conditions that they lived in and their generosity spirit. And by this time, there was like hundreds of people coming to see this blonde guy from the other side of the world with all these muscles give a seminar. And I gave a seminar and they treated me so well. They even saved up some money and bought me some pizza at the time. And I thought I was really touched. And my whole journey of bodybuilding at that point had culminated at 16 years. And here I am on the other side of the world being treated so marvelously by these wonderful people who just wanted to connect with me. They wanted to learn the same things that I wanted to learn when I got started when I was 15 years old. And it was like a watershed moment. I'm like, I get it. I was now able to answer the questions of myself at 15, 16 years later through these boys. And I realized that my goal, my mission in life wasn't to win bodybuilding contests and look a certain way, although that was part of it. What that was really designed for is to serve as a platform where I could help other people realize their potential and to also help them, you know, achieve physical perfection. What I didn't know, so the story took a twisted plot as it sometimes does, is after that contest, due to the exertions that I had put on myself at that time, I gained 42 pounds of fat and water in just 11 weeks. So I went from Mr. Universe to Mr. Marshmallow. And, I was devastating as that was. And I realized, how is this possible? I've got the best trainer in the world. I've followed this thing like Spartan discipline. I've trained all these hours, worked so hard for so many years. How is it possible that I can have a complete physical meltdown? What's going on? And I had the good fortune of meeting a medical doctor who had overcome a variety of serious fatal illnesses using nutrition and health products and stuff. And he took me under his wing. And I remember the first meeting with him, I asked him, I said, well, how did I get to this? And he says, wait, you've learned to build a body from the outside in, but you haven't learned to build the body from the inside out. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, he's right. My whole world was focused on an externalization of health and vitality and performance. But I wasn't accounting to my internal organs, my own state of being, my digestive processes and stuff. And so he started me on a process of transformation using correcting my digestion, which I had compromised through my contest stuff. And in 6 months, I regained my condition. And not only that, I felt great. I had better health, better vitality, better performance. And at that point, I started teaching those principles, building the body from the inside out all around the world.
Wait, I've suffered, maybe not in a similar way, but I've suffered for about 8 years with acid reflux, and it sucked, man. Like, without going into my story in gory detail, I can tell you that I tried a lot of different things, both natural and traditional, and in the end, I ended up having an anti-reflux surgery using a Lynx device. I had a hiatal hernia. Basically, part of my stomach was kind of coming up through my diaphragm. But ever since, it's been completely different. No more medicine. I'm kind of back to a normal diet. I feel 100% better. But like, for those of us that are struggling with digestion issues, kind of like what you just described, whether it be acid reflux or other problems of digestion, what are some other like effective habits and practices that you learned from this guy or along the way to help us improve our digestion?
Well, first and foremost, I think, is mindset. And number one, I think we have a world, we live in a world where everything is divided into victim and perpetrator. And oftentimes we take the role of the victim. And I think that is a mistake that a lot of people make on the mental side of any issues that they might come up in their health. I see both health and disease as responses based on your genetics, your environment, and your lifestyle choices. And if I'm producing a result that's not, or I'm in dis-ease or dysfunction, what I have to accept is, okay, what is my body telling me? And what do I need to alter in order to get a different result or the result that I desire, which is obviously, feeling great.
Yeah, like not feeling crappy.
So I think it's important to take back one's responsibility there. It's not the doctor's job. It's not the nutritionist's job. It's not anybody else's job to fix you. It's up to you to fix yourself. Now, you may use or leverage some expertise in the area, but I think when you take full ownership and accountability of what's going on in your life, like with bone-crushing honesty, that is the foundation of transformation in virtually any area of life, and most importantly, in your own personal health. Second thing I would say is what I have learned, just to give you some statistics, which is crazy. About 85% of the population in the United States reports digestive issues at some point, and approximately 25% of the population is on some form of permanent prescription medication.
Yeah, like PPIs and yeah, two blockers and all that stuff.
Right. It's crazy. And the evidence is mounting that digestive-related illnesses actually are the fifth leading cause of death. That's crazy. And you go, well, was that possible? Well, if you actually look at heart disease and diabetes and cancer, many of those things are actually traced to dietary habits. We all heard this common thread of you are what you eat, right? We've all heard that. But I will take that one step further. You're not what you eat. You are what you absorb, digest, utilize, and on one side also what you eliminate. Okay, if you fail to eliminate the waste, then you can also run into problems. And so this is all related to the digestive canal. So if it's okay with you, I'll just give you a quick synopsis and then I'll point out where things go wrong for people.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So first and foremost, the digestive system starts in your mouth, and it's a single canal that extends all the way through your body right to your bum. And through that process, you have to take the food that you consume. So I'm going to chew my food. It goes down my esophagus and goes into the upper cardiac portion of the stomach. At this point, this is where the digestive enzymes present in the food are supposed to break down the food. Now, here's problem number one. Humans are the only species on the planet that eat their food mostly cooked, okay, or irradiated. A lot of our fruits and vegetables, which are raw, are actually been irradiated. So they've essentially been cooked. And what that, anything cooked, heated over 114 degrees, destroys all the enzymes present in the food. Now, enzymes are the workers in the body. There's only two things that do work in the body. That's enzymes and probiotics. I'll get to probiotics in a minute. Enzymes control everything from thinking to blinking. There's over 25,000 enzymatic reactions inside the body. Nothing happens with an enzyme. An enzyme is a catalyst that accelerates and changes things. It's like this is what separates the living from the dead, enzymes. So what happens is that humans, so let's compare us to animals. If a tiger goes eats a zebra, okay, it eats the zebra in a raw live state. It consumes usually the entrails first and then the rest of the body. The entrails have the most of the enzymes and probiotics, and then it eats the rest and goes on. A cow will eat grass in a raw state, in its live state, and get the enzymes from it, right? A bear might eat a fish and it eats the raw fish. It doesn't cook it. It doesn't take it home and barbecue it. And so what that does is that you actually absorb the enzymes of that other animal or that other plant that you use to metabolize the food and also to perform other functions in the body. When, as humans, you eat cooked food, and this will also happen in animals and has been replicated in a lot of studies, when you eat cooked food, what happens is your body has to manufacture enzymes, and this has a huge metabolic cost. And that metabolic cost means that by the time you're 40 years old, you have about 30% of the enzymes that you had when you were born. And what that means is you don't move as quick, you don't think as quick, your body doesn't heal as fast, your cognitive function starts to decline. All of these things are related, not because you're getting older, although some of them could be attributed to that. It's largely in part because you don't have enough of these enzymes, enough of these workers to do the jobs, the biochemical jobs in your body. What do? Well, you can eat a completely raw food diet, but that's not really going to replenish what you've lost. And it's also very complicated. It's socially awkward. I've done it. I've done a 2-year completely raw food diet.
And I think it's a great way to clean your body out. Certainly could do it for a period of time, but it's really difficult socially and not very practical and may not provide all the nutrients that a lot of people need, just the way it is and what's accessible to people. So very, very difficult in order to do that. I'm not here to slam raw food or promote any diet process. I'm just saying that's the reality. What I find is by supplementing the diet with enzymes, number one, the ability to absorb and digest your food is accelerated, and you don't get the bloating, you don't get the gas, you don't get a lot of these things that are associated with the digestive discomfort. Now, after the first 30 minutes, what happens is hydrochloric acid comes into the body. And this is going to be of interest to you, Tom, particularly because having suffered from acid reflux. What happens at that point is that your body releases hydrochloric acid, and this starts to change the pH of the chyme as your stomach starts to contract and all this sort of stuff. And as the pH change, different enzymes become inactive and other enzymes become reactive. And it also will kill, that HCl is designed to kill off parasites and also to accelerate the breakdown of foods, particularly of protein. Now, a couple things happen for people who have acid reflux. Oftentimes, acid reflux is not caused by too much acid. It's caused by insufficient, because there's a esophageal flap on the top of your esophagus that closes when your HCl levels in the stomach reach a certain level. Closes, that triggers it to close. If you don't have enough HCl, it stays open and some of this acid starts to splash up and causing the acid reflux, heartburn, all of these type of things. So a big source is, well, obviously in your case, it might have been related to anatomical problems that weren't allowing enough hydrochloric acid to come in. But for most people, it's that the number one, they're dehydrated. And number two, they're at a stage in life where they don't produce enough hydrochloric acid. So what happens? More parasites, more bacteria can get through the body. Food particles don't get digested and go into the intestinal tract. Whole host of things start to happen. If it's working properly, then what happens, even if it was working properly, eventually the food will come out of the lower part of the stomach into the intestines. And some minerals are added to it, which are called bicarbonate buffers that bring the acid back to neutral. And what that does is it keeps the body so you don't burn holes in your intestine.
You're not getting fistulas running around in there.
Yeah, that's where people get ulcers, because they're not buffering the acid from their stomach when it comes out. And that's where they get, you know, duodenal ulcers, perforated ulcers, all that sort of stuff. So once the food enters into there, what happens is probiotics, good bacteria, will start to break those foods down and take it across the intestinal tract, and then that'll be transferred to the various parts of the body. And then ultimately, through peristaltic contractions, the waste product, whatever's left over, will then be excreted out of the body. Now, if you have an imbalance in your probiotic levels, and so in, I always call it with bacteria, that's a probiotic is pro-life, antibiotic is anti-life, but inside your intestines, which is called oftentimes the microbiome, the amount of bacteria, the various cultures that exist there. And there's anywhere from several hundred to 500 different types of bacteria in there. And for, you know, illustrative purpose, we can say 10% of these are good for you, 10% of them are bad for you, 80% are opportunists, depending on the environment, what's going on. So what happens is this balance is so important to your health, to your well-being. If you have a bad imbalance, this can cause uncontrollable food cravings. It can cause depression. It can cause bloating, skin conditions, a variety of illnesses, constipation, digestive issues, all sorts of problems can have from an bacterial imbalance, you know, yeast infections, all kinds of different things. So diet is part of it, but also the cultures that are in that. And if someone has taken a lot of antibiotics, oftentimes they have severely disrupted microbiomes and require the introduction of probiotics for extended periods of time with specialized diets in order to regain their control of their microbiome as the way it was designed. And so what we have found is, so long story short of all that, because it was kind of a long thing, but I really want to get to your listeners, because there's so many people suffering from this. There's a simple way to deal with this. We've created an education system that allows you to identify whatever symptom you might be suffering from. So let's say you've got bloating. Let's say you've got gas. Let's say you have acid reflux. Let's say you have, you have incontinence, right? Constipated. Whatever it happens to be, we actually break down on a video for you and demonstrate what are the things that you can do for your life, what are the things that you can eat, what are all the things that you can avoid, what triggers those things, and then also the nutritional supplementation that would allow you to also accelerate your body's ability to correct the problem. And so what we found is the two most important things are enzymes and probiotics. And so because I was so passionate about this, and knowing the nutritional industry as I do, I knew that the only way I could guarantee that someone got the right product was if I went out and made it myself. So, you had to build a company, and that's what we did. We built a company and created some of the most potent enzymes on the planet, and a patented probiotic strain, which is actually proven to survive the gastrointestinal tract because there's so many probiotics. In fact, most that are sold on store shelves are not proven to survive the gastrointestinal tract, and there's nothing more expensive than a product that doesn't work. And so we're a philosophy-based oriented company first that provides digestive aids such as this in order to help people overcome these challenges.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the probiotic piece because I was going to ask you about that. When I first got acid reflux, I had a person that was into nutrition, a friend of mine or colleague, I should say, was like, you got to take probiotics. And I remember I was like, okay, I'll take probiotics. I'll try anything at this point because nothing seems to be working. And I remember taking probiotics in the beginning for a while and it did absolutely like zilch for me. Can you share with us in a little bit more detail like why most of those probiotics don't work?
Great question. I'll cite a conversation I had last fall walking with Naveen Jain, my business partner. He's, by the way, the founder of Viome, one of the best home tests for being able to determine what is the active strains of probiotics in your intestinal tract. And he said almost every probiotic on the market is actually crap. It doesn't do what it says. Most probiotics are marketed out there that they are colonizing strains that cultivate in your body and all this sort of stuff. And his results are showing that no, and that has been confirmed by a variety of individuals in the health industry that I'm aware of, that they had been taking all these different probiotics and none of them were colonizing. We developed a product that was actually, in the largely part, because they don't survive the gastrointestinal tract. Either, number one, they got pasteurized if it was in yogurts. A lot of people think you can eat yogurt and they can pasteurize, but most of the yogurt that you get in the store is pasteurized. Yogurt should be sour and it should be fresh. It shouldn't taste like sugar and berry, like all these sugar and protein. It's not supposed to be like that, okay? It should be kind of sour. That's a good probiotic strain. So that's, you can just knock most, pretty much all of that off the market. The other thing is if it's not been stabilized properly, you don't know how long it's been on the shelf. You don't know how many active count is inside that bacteria. It'll say, 100 billion or whatever it is, but is it really at that store and are they live and active? You have no idea if it is or if it isn't. The other thing is they add a lot of agents like preservatives and other fillers that can actually block the effectiveness of that probiotic, or they will combine what's called competing strains. In other words, in order to make themselves look good, they'll put, 15 strains or 12 strains or 8 strains, mm-hmm. or, I've seen one with 32 strains of probiotics. So it's what I call that as a mishmash of maybes. Let's take every hot topic, throw it in a bottle and say, here, you get all your probiotics. When in fact, those probiotics would actually be competing with each other for food space inside the body. So what we did is we cultivated a bacteria strain that has been patented. It's been shown to actually survive the gastrointestinal tract. It's a strain that doubles every 20 minutes, goes through the entire body, and it has the unique ability to digest protein, which is the number one source of food for bad bacteria. It is also what makes viruses work. So these things will go in, and as it says in the patent claims, it is effective against viruses, retroviruses, various types of tumors. It digests. It's all kinds of stuff on the patent. It's pretty impressive. And when you take that, and I've had people that have been taking probiotics for 10, 15, 20 years, they feel the difference. And that's why we actually back all of our products by a 365-day guarantee. And why we do that is we ship directly to customers all around the world. And if we don't fix your digestive problem, whatever it is, we just say, give us whatever bottles you have back and we give you back all your money. We are that confident in our company, and we built a company based on that principles, because I've bought products that don't work and I can't stand that, and I don't want anybody to have that experience. So that's how we built the philosophy behind Bioptimizers, and we've been doing this now for 14 years. So it's a long time, and it's been great to help people, right? And I see all the testimonies and sometimes people suffering from 20, 30, 40 years. And in the matter of a few weeks, it's all their challenges are gone. It's the power of the body. You give it the right things and it fixes itself.
What's the website if somebody wanted to, you said you ship directly, like if somebody was interested in getting a probiotic?
I'm actually going to do something special for all your listeners. And I'm going to give you this website. It's called www.bioptimizers.com/next-year. And inside of that, when you click on that link, you can put it in the show notes. We're going to give everybody that listens to this my 12-week awesome health course, which actually explains all these things in detail. Plus, we give you the digestive vault, which explains all the different conditions for people. Because again, I'm not telling people to go just take my products. I'm saying learn about what you're doing. We interviewed naturopathic physician Katrine Valinsky on there, that she breaks down everything that you can do, what are the dietary things you have. And also there'll be an offer when you get all that sort of stuff, that you can get our products at a discount with all the guarantees and all that sort of stuff. So that's kind of my gift.
Awesome.
Because I just, yeah, it is awesome.
Yeah, we'll definitely put that in the show notes and we'll have that front and center. Well, I want to pivot, Wade, to a different topic. Or related topic, but let me share kind of a story first. I'm a huge football fan, grew up, you know, playing football, and at least until high school, and I realized that I wasn't big enough to continue playing football. But ever since I watched an interview with Tony Gonzalez, who's a future Hall of Famer tight end, he was talking about the benefits of going vegetarian. And I've been toying with this idea of becoming a vegetarian off and on for a few years. And Tony, he credits the switch with saving his NFL career and extending it for as long as it was, which I think was, I want to say it was like 15 years, which in the NFL, that's an eternity. And just in general, of just giving him a very, very healthy life. And I think one of the things that holds me back is that both my wife and I, we both come from a traditional, I'll say, meat-oriented diet, right? We grew up with steak, pork, and the like. And we do eat vegetables. It's not to say that we're just like, you know, a meatitarian society in our household. But it just seems like for us, given our at least our background and things like that, like it would be a tough stretch for us. What lessons have you learned as a vegetarian that are applicable to help those of us with that kind of traditional diet lifestyle?
Well, I can completely relate. I mean, when I grew up, if there wasn't meat in the meal, this wasn't a meal. This was some kind of faux snack of some sort I wasn't too interested in. And, you know, because I grew up in a rural place, hunted, fished, you know, my uncle had cows that we would have, and we had grew pigs, and, you know, got it, all that stuff, you know. So I would say, first and foremost, I think one of the big dangers that people in this whole diet culture mentality that's pervasive in our society is that they get themselves pegged and attached to some form of label. People go, hey, are you a vegan or a vegetarian? What are you? And I'm going, I'm a flexitarian, right? Although I have not eaten meat since 2001. I will say that I don't eat any flesh. I think first and foremost, you got to pick a diet that's based on your physiology, your needs, and your in the social constraints that you find yourself in. I think there's a lot of different ways that you can live a healthy lifestyle. My business partner, for example, loves following a ketogenic diet. He eats a lot of meat, a lot of fat, and I'm on almost all plant-based. Like almost all plants is what I eat. So we're totally polar opposites, and we run the same company. So I'm not attached to it. But I think first and foremost, you need to test your own personal genetics, and methylation is a form of how well you absorb food, and where you are in your life. What are your goals in life if you want to make that transition? And to get to make that transition in a way that's simple and easy. And when I made that transition early on, the problem was is there wasn't a lot of plant-based proteins out there for athletes like myself. Very, very rare. Now it's easy to make that transition. So if you're coming from a high protein-based diet, oftentimes there is going to be, you know, a few months where you make that transition and find the proteins that actually satisfy your natural feeling inside the body. Second thing, you will not have the same full feeling on a plant-based diet generally as if you're on a meat diet. And I remember what that used to be like when I ate meat, and you kind of like, oh, I feel full. Well, I don't have that anymore. That's not an experience I have. And so when you make that transition, it kind of feels strange. Again, you start to realize, well, maybe that's not really a natural place for me to feel. That's a sensation associated with that diet. So I think that's important, those things. I think getting a naturopathic physician professional or nutritionist in your corner that can help you make that transition and the choices that's right for you, and to help you find the foods that are going to make that simple and easy. And especially if you're young or you're an athlete or something and have, you know, requirements where you need to build a lot of muscle and stuff like that, I do believe that you're probably going to have to supplement your diet with some form of plant protein in order to maintain your muscle mass or stay at peak levels. And of course, I use a lot of digestive enzymes and a lot of probiotics to ensure that I'm able to absorb, utilize, and digest all the protein I am getting, because I just don't eat that much, you know. And, you know, people say, well, how much protein you eat? And I remember when I was competing at the Mr. Universe, I was eating about 75 grams a day, where my competitors were eating 300, you know, 350. And
that seems
the reality, well, you know, bodybuilding is kind of an obscene sport. But the point of the matter was, is I was probably absorbing and utilizing more protein than they were.
Wait, before I move on to the last part of our show, is there anything else that I'm missing? And obviously, I'm sure if we had time and space for a longer conversation, that's probably a much more voluminous question to ask. But anything I haven't asked you about that you said, hey, you know, this is something that you guys should really, really know?
Well, I think there's so many people that say that, you know, they kind of put getting their health in order off until they're in crisis mode. And I think if there's one thing that I can implore on people, especially for people who are looking to high performance lifestyle, it's really easy, you know, running a business, having a family, doing all these things to let the physicality go. But if you don't carve out the time to optimize your health and to really perform at the, like, give your body everything it requires in order to perform at that next level, not only will you not perform as well as you could, but you're setting yourself up for challenges down the road. And unfortunately, some people who are so mentally strong, and a lot of people who are performers or high achievers or really accelerating, they've got great minds, that they're really focused and they can push past some of the messages that their body sends. And the reality is if you look at today and the way the sedentary lifestyles are, our exposure to digital technology and how it's affecting us as humans, taking the time to carving it out and putting in it just as your most important meetings to eat right and to exercise on a daily basis is as essential as any other function you do in your life. You must implement it now, especially the way society is. No ifs, ands, or buts, and no excuses.
I'll yes and that all day long. Look, it's time for my favorite part of the show. This is where we talk about one of the best habits we can adopt today. And for me, I think that is the habit of reading. Wade, I want you to think about the books you've really enjoyed over the years or books that have stood out to you. What are the two or three that you like to recommend or that you remember?
Boy, I'm a reader. I read every day. I love reading. I would say probably the book that helped me navigate the world the most was Power Versus Force by Dr. David Hawkins, who was a psychiatrist who had over 50 years of psychiatric practice. He was also a nutritionist that started orthomolecular nutrition, treatment of disease with nutrition. He founded all these things, and he created a map of consciousness that really helps you navigate the world and manage your expectations of others and worlds and cultures and everything. It's just brilliant. He's got a whole series after it. I went to all of it. Used to see him in lectures. Fantastic. Transformed my life. I can't imagine my life without it. Mm. Another book that really had a profound effect on me was Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, who was the first Swami to actually live for an extended period of time in the West. And he's really the father of the yoga movement in all of West. Like, nobody knew about that before that. And that book is a fantastic journey where he exposes the Westerner to Eastern philosophy, which has been around for thousands of years. And that book was transformative for me, got me into meditation, got me into understanding Eastern philosophies and studies, and really helped me navigate my personal issues with organized religion. And I got to see the benefits of all of it and just transcend it. So that, I think those are probably two of the most important books that I've read that have impacted me, I would say, the most over anything that I have. And then recently, I'm going to give a shout out here because I read this one recently to a friend of mine by the name of Garrett Gunderson, which was Killing Sacred Cows. And this book was all about just finances. And I thought it was one of the most unique books on finances. I'm passionate about finance. I'm passionate about investing. I'm passionate about those things. And he had just such an amazing take. He makes an amazing life. I know him personally. He's a phenomenal person. But the way he looked at building wealth in your life, building a lifestyle, money, spending, all these things was counter to almost everything I've seen out there. And it's I thought it was a very transformational book. So that was one of the most current ones, because the other
without giving away, you know, the kind of the secrets of the book, like what's kind of the higher level counterintuitive insight that he was articulating in that book?
Well, I think the not creating a budget, creating a spending plan, leveraging the benefits of a trust like the ultra wealthy people do, and maximizing your insurance so that you don't just try to get a death benefit, that you actually try to insure you as the productive person in your life. And then finally, generating enough passive income in your life that within 3 to 7 years, that your choice in profession was not dictated by need. It was dictated by your heart's desire.
That's going on my list.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, Wade, that's all the time I have. I just want to say this has been a fantastic conversation. I really appreciate it. I'm walking away with concrete habits and practices to integrate in my life, and I know the rest of us will as well. Thanks, Wade. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much, Tom. Great to be here.
You can connect with Wade Lightheart online through his company's website at buyoptimizers.com. And on Twitter at his Twitter handle, Wade T. Lightheart. That's WadeTLighthart. All the links and resources Wade and I discussed, including the link to his special offer for Next Year Now listeners, which contains his 12-week course and discounts on nutritional supplements, can be found at the page created just for this episode. You'll find it all at nextyearnowpodcast.com/36. And finally, just a reminder, if you like the show and enjoy learning from our guests each week, please consider giving us a rating and review on iTunes. It really helps us stay relevant and findable by listeners like you. That's it for today. I'll see you next time.